Welcome to the Fantasy NASCAR Podcast. I'm Pierce Dietrich. You can follow me on Twitter at Race for the Prize. This podcast is brought to you by FanVice.com. Check out FanVice.com if you're looking for daily fantasy baseball information. I hope football is right around the corner. We've got a big-time golf tournament this weekend. But don't worry. I know some people out there are saying, oh, man, golf is going to take over. Well, golf already matters more. It's a pretty big golf tournament. But the NASCAR race doesn't start until 5 p.m. on Sunday. You know, that U.S. Open thing that happens usually runs a little bit into the evening, but it should be wrapping up by then. But hey, if you're looking for daily fantasy golf content, I know the guys at FanVice.com, Karl Marx, Ben, everyone else that I'm forgetting. There's several of them. They're very good. And there's a lot of free content. They have free shows. So if you don't want to sign up, that's fine. But there are packages for the season. There might even be a package for a one-week sign-up. So maybe you just want the U.S. Open content, or maybe you want to look at the cheat sheet for the Xfinity race coming up this week. There is not a cup race. But if you've noticed in the DraftKings lobby, they've been hyping this Cornhusker something or other contest. So I imagine, I haven't seen it yet, that DraftKings, because there really isn't anything else going on fantasy-wise, NBA is gone, baseball is baseball, the golf tournament will be over Sunday. You don't have a cup race, but there is an Xfinity race. It starts at 5 p.m. They're going to hype that up, and you're probably going to see a pretty good, I would imagine, we at the very least go back to the $10,000 payouts that we were seeing earlier in the season with the Xfinity races. I wouldn't be surprised to see twice as much. I don't know. I'm always the worst person at predicting the payout structure for these daily fantasy NASCAR contests, but they've been hyping it up. They've been giving tickets that you can win to enter the Iowa race. So no cup race, but there is Iowa action. So I will write an article later this week. There will be cheat sheets. I might do projections. I typically don't do projections for the Xfinity race, but hey, what do you know? Sunday, 5 p.m. I'll try to see if I can make that work. You listen to the podcast. You can also check out my other content at other sites where I will talk about the Iowa race coming up. This is the rain delay right now, Sunday afternoon, so I cannot talk about what happened in the cup race. Well, I'm assuming, and what my theory was in the way that I was planning my build going in, talking to all the other guys in Slack, I didn't think, well, I read a couple of weather reports, and one guy said there's a 20% chance that they put this race in, get this race in, and then you have Monday doesn't look very good either. Teams, a lot of them have vacation plan. They want to get out of town. They don't really care at this point. Blaney and Elliott are going on a bro trip over to Ireland. Jimmy Johnson's going to Sweden. They're all leaving the country. They've got flights booked. They need to get out of town. They don't care if it's a short race. There's a lot of people in NASCAR probably feel the same way. I did not believe we were going to get a full race in, so I built my lineups in that fashion. And it looks like we got a chance for that strategy to play out. They're drying the track. They might be able to get it a little small window to get the race in. So hopefully that works out for me. We can talk about the Xfinity race really quick before we start breaking down Iowa. What did I think about the Michigan race? Well, I was greatly disappointed, but that really wasn't the fault of the racing. It's really my fault for getting way too hyped up, getting way too excited, and I should have known. I remember watching the All-Star race, and I was so pumped up for that. You remember the podcast about how I thought it was going to be life-changing, and my wife was sitting beside me just saying, well, this looks like any other race. They're really not doing that much. And I was trying to say, no, but the reality was, no, they weren't. They weren't passing the lead. Remember the All-Star race? You saw some side-by-side action, but the reality was the leader wasn't getting passed. And I know they're going to say there was a lead change. That's not a lead change when you slide in front of the leader for a split second and then you're back in second place. If you fully make a pass, then there's a lead change. Kyle Busch, Kevin Harvick, those guys weren't getting passed in the All-Star race. It just didn't happen. It was good, though. And that's the thing I want to say is that, okay, I need to lower the bar a little bit. I wanted life-changing. I wanted a life-changing experience, and that's not going to happen. It's a little too high. So there was some good. There was some bad. The bad was obvious. We had single-file racing for a good portion of the race, and there was the high line that could not be passed. It felt a lot like the plate races that we saw earlier this year at Talladega, where if you tried to go on your own, you just couldn't get it done. Now, this was for a different reason. And at Talladega and Daytona, if you tried to make a pass, you just were too loose. You couldn't get grip. You couldn't pass. Here, you had control, but you just could not carry speed. And if you got out of line, you couldn't make it forward, and you're going to get blocked out, and you end up losing three or four positions. And at a certain point, people just said, "Well, I'm not going to make moves anymore." And that's the last thing you want, is just a single file freight train chugging lap after lap. And the biggest damning or condemning or the biggest flaw or the moment was at the end of the race, where Kyle Busch, in fifth place, or I think he was in third place, tried to make a move. He had the best car by far, best handling, most speed, and he tried to make a move to the lead, and he could not get it done. He just could not. You can get one car at a time. It's definitely possible, but the only problem is you have to leapfrog that car and hope that there's an open gap for you to slide into, and in most cases, there's not an open gap. The cars are designed well enough that you can slingshot for one car. But if you cannot get back into the line, you're going to go backwards. And at the end, Kyle Busch tried to do it and tried to pass two cars. Couldn't quite get by two cars and ends up sliding backwards. But I don't want to sound like a Debbie Downer here. It is a step forward. And there's progress to be made, and they'll figure this thing out. I don't want to just completely ditch it and say it's a failed experiment. We know that when we start getting restarts and we jumble them all back together, it does get pretty exciting, and there are some moves and there is some shuffling around. It was definitely better than last year's Xfinity Michigan race or any other Michigan race in recent memory. So it's a step forward. Are we there yet? No, but we got to keep moving. Don't get rid of this package. I know there's the people that hate it, and the people that hated it are really excited about it not being breathtaking, but it was definitely one of the better Xfinity Michigan races that we have seen. Am I a little disappointed? Yes, I am. I was pretty frustrated yesterday, but it's unreasonable. We're getting there. I don't know if we'll ever get pack racing. I want pack racing. Maybe they can figure it out. I don't know how you bring back the tandem drafting, but even if you do tandem drafting, which they can do now, you have to have a partner that goes along with you, and none of these guys seem to. A couple times they did. Austin Dillon won because Daniel Hemric pushed him to the front, but there wasn't a lot of that going on. Paul Menard would work with the guy, and then that guy would just say, "See you later, I'm tucking in line." Or Kevin Harvick would work with a lot of guy, and they would just completely betray each other every chance they got. It's still early. The drivers are still figuring it out as well, so I don't know. This week, it's Iowa, and this is going to be an exploratory podcast. I've watched Iowa races in the past, but have I ever really analyzed Iowa races? No, I haven't. But neither has anyone else. No one in the Daily Fantasy NASCAR community has really broken down Iowa races or played Fantasy NASCAR at Iowa. This is a pretty even playing field right now. But you got to believe before today and Sunday, a lot of people are going to be going deep and getting a lot of research. One of the things that's going to prevent some of the research is if you go on the YouTube and say, "Hey, I want to watch some of these full races from past YouTube or past Iowa races," they don't exist. I'm pretty sure the only one that you can watch is the 2016 fall Iowa race, which is fine, and it'll help you out with an idea of what the racing is going to be like, but you're kind of limited in what you can do visually with your research if you don't completely remember watching those Iowa races in the past. And I doubt that a lot of people watch every single race every single week from every single series and remember them for the last 3 years. Even the drivers that were in those races don't remember those races. So it's even playing field. Who dives in and gets into the numbers? It's going to be exploratory the way the podcast is. I've never gone over these numbers before, so they're all going to be new to me. I may stumble around a little bit. I may take seconds to double check because you're going to have different guys in different cars every single time. This is usually an off week for the Cup Series, or Iowa happens when the Cup Series is somewhere else, so you don't see double dippers. You can see double dippers. For example, in that 2016 race that I was talking about, you did get a double dipper, which was Brad Keselowski, but they were also racing in Pocono that weekend, so he didn't practice at all. He literally jumped on a plane, flew in, landed, qualified, and raced. He did not run the car in practice. He did not have any input on how it was going to be set up. And guess what? He didn't race very well. Go figure. But there's a lot of little things like that we're going to have to try to figure out, which will be hard for this podcast. Anyway, what is Iowa? It's a short track, but it also has those intermediate track tendencies. It's not a pure short track. It's a short track, intermediate track, kind of in between. It's designed by Rusty Wallace. It was patterned after Richmond, which makes sense why it has a little bit of intermediate track tendencies or characteristics. Richmond is one of those, well, it's an obvious short track, but in a way it is kind of a lap turner, and it runs in a sense like an intermediate track. Strange, but it's, you know, when you try to find, it's just the calling things short track is fine from a NASCAR fan, but when you start to analyze and try to predict, the word short track is really dangerous to use, because Martinsville is a short track, Bristol is a short track, but you would never put those together, and we talk about this a lot on the podcast. It's just we have these terms from being NASCAR fans, we try to carry them over to be DFS fan players, and it just doesn't work. Iowa is its own thing. It's probably best just to understand the makeup of the track than to give it some sort of label. It's 7/8 of a mile, so it's under a mile, so that makes it a short track. But it's got progressive banking, which allows you really to run side by side. And there's going to be one preferred lane. It's going to be on the bottom. The upper groove where you have a little more banking, it will come in, and it will allow faster cars to pass slower cars. It'll allow faster cars to get around lap traffic as long as lap traffic is running on the bottom line. This will probably remind you a little bit of the Richmond race, Xfinity race a little bit earlier this season. Richmond doesn't have as much banking, though. But obviously, it was designed like it, has a little bit of the characteristics. You get side-by-side racing, you get pretty good restarts where you're going to have a little bit of a battle instead of one guy just shooting out and being gone because that high line works. You'll see some pretty good competition on your restarts. All right, so let's go back and let's look at 2017, the fall race. I believe it would have been in August. This was, I don't know where the Cup Series was that weekend, but here are your top fantasy scores. Ryan Preece was the number one score. Ryan Preece was in the number 20 car last year. Why was he in the 20? Who normally is in the 20 car? So last year, the 20 car was almost kind of an all-star shared ride. This year, Christopher Bell is in the 20, but Eric Jones ran most of the laps in the 20, and then you had other drivers who would step in every once in a while. Obviously, in this one, Eric Jones is running the Cup race, so Ryan Preece jumps in. He leads 141 laps. That's pretty good. Not completely sure off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure that as we go through, JGR Toyotas have pretty much dominated these races, and that's pretty much been the trend when we go to racetracks where you don't have Cup Series regulars. It's been JGR Toyotas over the year. Now, this year, a little bit different. We have seen, well, Junior Motorsports stepped up in one race, but I want to, did Christopher Bell wreck in that race? Or Christopher Bell, I believe, started last in that race, if I remember. Anyway, your second place fantasy-wise, J.J. Yaley running the race to completion. He was running for TriStar Motorsports, not RSS. J.J. Yaley ran the race to the end yesterday, folks. Can you believe it? We had a big conversation in the Slack chat about, man, is J.J. Yaley really going to try to run this race to the end? He runs the plate races. And Michigan, it's not a plate race, but it looked like it was going to be a plate race, and it pretty much ended up being a plate race. And yes, J.J. Yaley ran it to completion. How about that? Kyle Benjamin scored the third most points. Kyle Benjamin was in the number 18 JGR Toyota. He does not really lead any laps because Ryan Preece pretty much controls this entire race. But Kyle Benjamin starts second. He finishes second. His average running position is third. So he pretty much was right behind Ryan Preece the entire time. That's some awesome domination from JGR. And that's two non-regulars in a JGR Toyota, which is pretty impressive. It's one thing to see guys that run every single week and they're with that team every single week and they work with that crew chief every single week go to a track and completely dominate. And this is definitely a domination moment. But these are two drivers that are just stepping into a car. Those must be some really fast cars. And if those JGR Toyotas were really fast at Iowa last year, then ding, 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 they're going to be really fast this year. The 20, obviously, Christopher Bell is going to be a favorite. I don't know what he's done with this track, though, in the past. We can look and see some of his truck racing, but this is probably a new track to him. I don't think it's going to matter. We see that a lot with Christopher Bell. The 18 car, that's a big question mark. Maybe Ryan Preece steps back in that car. I don't believe Noah Gragson is scheduled to be in that car. We could see Kyle Benjamin pop back up. He ran a race earlier this season. We just don't know at this point. Justin Allgaier gets you the fourth most fantasy points, starts 14th. He finishes 20th, but he led a – I'm sorry. No, Ryan Preece did not lead everything. Justin Allgaier led 106 laps in this race, ran 12 fast laps – or scored 12 fast lap points. Preece scored, by the way, 33.5 fast lap points, 33.25 laps led points, 114 total points. Huge. What kills Allgaier is he starts 14th but finishes 20th. And I wonder if he was in some sort of wreck towards the end of the race. And I'm looking and I'm not seeing that he was in an accident at all. Did he have some sort of mechanical issue? Did he have a pit road penalty? Let me look. And I'm sorry that you're going to get a little bit of these hiccups because we just don't know some of this stuff. Having not watched, Justin Allgaier finishes 20th. He finishes three laps down. Let's see if there was a pit. Can't see pit stops and we don't have penalties listed. Apparently Racing Reference, they do a lot of stuff, and they should be commended, but they don't get everything. So we don't have the penalties. For some reason, Allgaier finishes all these laps down. And as I look through, he is not marked as someone who had an accident. Something must have happened, mechanical issue. I don't know what it was. Maybe it was a penalty, but that would be a lot of penalties to force him down to that point. Either way, that is what happened. Brian Scott. What car was Brian Scott running? He starts 11th, finishes 3rd. I'm assuming he's probably in an RCR car. And that's right, he was in the number 3 car. So a pretty good car. And who knows who's going to be in that 3 car this weekend? Could it be Austin Dillon? Could it be Ty Dillon? I want to believe that those guys are going to try to enjoy their week off. And you're going to see somebody walk out of the cornfield onto the racetrack for this race. Brennan Poole is going to be your 6th. Biggest score, starts 8th, finishes 4th. And I'll look at the practices or the practice speeds here in a second, but I just want to get an idea of the names, where they start, where they finish, what kind of points they score. He scores 50 points, starts in the top 10, playing Brendan Poole. That would have been tricky to do, but he hangs on. He runs, average position is 6. So Brendan Poole's a guy I want to write down and see if maybe he had, well, I can look at it right now. How was he in practice? How was Brendan Poole in practice? So if I look this and pull it up, because literally pull it up. Really. 14th in practice 1, 7th in practice 2. I don't have long run speeds here. We will want to look at long runs because it is a short track, and I want to believe that there's going to be some wear on those tires. I don't have the long runs when I look at the spreadsheet data points because it's a little too much work to throw that in. By the way, 14th on the short run, 7th. Yeah, he had a top 10 car. He maintained that top 10 car, avoided issues, had a good race. He's in the 11 car, Brendan Poole. That is now a Ryan Truex ride. Brandon Jones is next to score the 7th most fantasy points. He starts 19th. He finishes 10th. And he runs 19th about the whole race. Looks like we might have had a late race caution here. Let me see. Yep, that's right. Kind of knew. Had to think something was up there with Brendan Poole. Brandon Jones. Brandon Jones was running 20th the entire race, but he finishes 10th. And that's because we get a wreck with the 19 car, the 24 car, and the 60 car with basically 6 laps remaining. You get a green, white, checkered finish. Who was in that 19 car? Suarez probably didn't come down to run that, did he? Gotta look real quick. The 19 car was driven by Brandon Jones. Wait, what? What? No. So Brandon Jones was in the car that caused how? What? That doesn't make. Anyway, so Brandon Jones runs in 20th the entire race, and late race caution. He ends up finishing 10th. Who caused that late race caution so he could get an extra restart? Well, none other than Brandon Jones. And what's confusing is, no, he wasn't. Okay, no, I was looking at starting position. Oh, there, right, that was crazy. No, the 19 car was Matt Tift. Matt Tift started that. All right, thank goodness. Brandon Jones is in the 19 this year. He was starting 19th. That's what threw me off. Yeah, he was in the 33 car for RCR last year, which now Matt Tift's in the, not 33, but the two. Gets confusing. It gets confusing when you go to some of these races that you haven't looked at in some time. William Byron, races from 17th to 9th. Probably would have been too expensive, but that would have been a great chalky play. You know William Byron's ended up finishing in the top 10. His average running position was 11th. Brett Moffitt runs from former Rookie of the Year in the Cup Series, Brett Moffitt. He's running in the Truck Series right now and doing pretty well. He's a championship contender, but I don't think anybody's going to beat Sato this year. Starting 21st, finishes 11th. Let me see what Moffitt was in the 96 car for Spencer Gallagher's team. Ran that. So old Mo Gallagher put him in a car. Decent car. Where did he run most of the race? Most of his race, he was right there around Brandon Jones. He was running 19th. Probably definitely benefited from that last restart. And then running at the top 10, Ryan Sieg. Starts 25th, finishes 14th. I can't completely verify this, but I'm pretty sure. I know Sieg runs well at Dover. I know Sieg runs well at Bristol. I don't know what he did at Richmond this year, and I really don't feel like pulling it up really quick, but I got a feeling that Sieg's a pretty good short track racer. Maybe in play this week. If he's at 6,800, which I believe was where he's priced last week, if he's under 7,000, I would definitely consider him, especially because we got the no cup bump, which we experienced for four races earlier this season, Richmond, Talladega, Dover, and there was another one, but I can't, Bristol, where you take out these cup drivers, and that's an automatic four spots for some of these guys. And he is one of the people that's definitely going to benefit from that. Or should, or he'd be close to benefiting from it. We'll see what happens. We'll go 10 to 20. Cole Custer starts 5th, finishes 5th. That's pretty good. Sorry, pretty good. But no hog points, and that means 40 fantasy points, and 40 fantasy points doesn't get the job done. Still 11th. Still 11th. Starts 5th, finishes 5th. Not a bad day. I wouldn't want to spend a $10,000 salary on him. But one thing to look at, his average running position was 5th. He's going to be better this year. And he's going to be in play. Someone we want to consider, even though I hate considering Cole Custer. But if you put him in this race this year, this is going to be, his third time now at Iowa. And no cup drivers, really. Maybe one in the racetrack. He can probably have a good day. We've got to wait and see what his price is. Obviously, Christopher Bell's number one. Justin Allgaier's number two. Whoever the hell is in the 18 car is right there with them. And then you've got the other guys who are running well this year. But Cole Custer's right there in the mix. He's in the conversation. Harrison Rhodes, 26th to 15th. What car was Harrison Rhodes driving? J.D. Davis's 01 car. So I think Smithley is in that car now. Blake Koch, 7th to 8th. What was Blake Koch? You know what? I said earlier Brennan Poole was running for... Blake Koch is Ryan Trix's car. Brennan Poole was running the 48 car, which is a Chip Ganassi car, which they don't run anymore. They'll roll the 42 car out there, but Chip Ganassi is no longer fielding the 48 car. But Blake Koch, 7th to 8th, typical Blake Koch performance. Daniel Hemric starts 3rd, finishes 7th. He is a short track guy, a guy that I would have on my radar. His average running position, though, was a little disappointing, a 13th. But someone I would think about. Brennan Gaughan, not really worried about that. Runs in teens, finishes teens. Elliott Sadler starts 6th, finishes 12th. BJ McLeod, 31st to 22nd. Not bad. That's kind of what you would expect from BJ McLeod in a no cup race. Dakota Armstrong, 20th to 17th. What car was he in, though? Let's see. I think he was in the JGL car. Sure enough, he was. He was in the number 28 JGL car. That would be the, not Lupton's, but the second car. They were running Toyotas, too, back then. Ross Chastain, 22nd, 18th. David Starr, 36 to 26. That's a place that you definitely want to play David Starr. Familiar names, familiar cars. If we look at trend-wise, you got three cars that started inside the top 10. The top 10 DFS-wise, 7 of them finished inside the top 10. And then you had a car that finished 11th, you had a car that finished 14th, and you had Justin Allgaier who finished 20th, who had that issue but had a ton of hog points, 40 hog points to be almost exact. So you probably would have said that he would have been around a top 10 car. 7 to 8 cars. When you're building your lineup, you really want to target guys that can finish in the top 10, at least with 4 picks. Your value, I don't know. Let me see if there would have been any value. Ryan Sieg may have given you some relief, but Ryan Sieg with no cup drivers is not going to be a $6,800 driver. Ryan Sieg's going to go up to where he was when we had the no cup bump. He's going to be an $8,000 driver, and I don't want to spend $8,000 on Ryan Sieg. Brett Moffitt might have come in cheap. probably would have, because he's in a car that isn't running this year. He doesn't have a lot of background. He would have been in a low 7Ks. I don't think they put him at 6K. I don't know if they'd really disrespect him and put him in the 5,000s, but he would have been a value play that you would have considered. Did Moffitt run well in practice? That would have cued us to play him. He ran 25th in practice 2. He ran 19th in practice 1. And then he started 21st. That would have been a tough go. It definitely would have been tough. Then we look at William Byron, Brandon Jones. They wouldn't have been cheap. Poole, Scott shouldn't have been cheap. You may have gotten a $7,000. I don't think so. I believe they would have seen the number 3 car and no Cup and priced him up. We have seen Kyle Benjamin be cheap, but when Kyle Benjamin was cheap, there was Cup drivers. I could see Kyle Benjamin easily being priced $7,000, $8,000. J.J. Yaley probably would have been your only ticket. But he might not have been as cheap. Remember, J.J. Yaley running for TriStar Motorsports was competing and completing races. This year, not the case. I don't know what they're going to do in Iowa. Don't have any clue. Let's look and see. So if I can't get any value in the top 10, then I would look at Harrison Rhodes, unfortunately. And what car was Harrison Rhodes in? I've just completely blanked on this. Harrison Rhodes was in Spencer Gallagher ride, right? Or is that somebody else? No, that was Brett Moffitt. How do I keep this stuff? All right, that was Brett Moffitt. Harrison Rhodes was in the, gosh, this is terrible podcasting, but JD Motorsports. So you would have got a value on Harrison Rhodes in the JD Motorsports. Let's see, did Harrison Rhodes at least put together some pretty good laps? He started 26th. Hell no, he didn't. He started 30. He had 34th in practice 1, 33 in practice 2. I really would not have gone near Harrison Rhodes starting 26th. What was his average running position? His average running position was 22nd. Not that bad. I don't know. He probably clearly got a little bit of bump there at the end of the race. Well, let's see. There's any other value. BJ McLeod going punt land. Armstrong would have been relatively cheap, but I wouldn't have been really that excited about playing Dakota Armstrong starting 20th, finishing 17th. I mean, that's basically like playing Dylan Lupton this year, but you get Dylan Lupton on a week where Dylan Lupton's going to be priced in the high sevens because of no Cup drivers. You're not going to get Dylan Lupton 6'4", maybe 6'8". I still believe they would put him in the sevens. Let's imagine there's Dylan Lupton that hasn't wrecked a bunch this season. That's where I would probably see him in the sevens. Let's see, did Dakota Armstrong at least have some halfway decent practice times? Yeah, he did. 17th in practice 1, 19th in practice 2, starting 20th. Ugh, that feels a lot like a Jeremy Clements play, but I'd rather have Jeremy Clements in that situation. Ross Chastain, typical Ross Chastain, but you're going to get a price increase on him this week. David Starr, straight punts. So straight punting homies with David Starr, BJ McLeod, and then paying up for 4 drivers. Looks like that would have been the structure. We'll see. Let's look at the 2017 spring Iowa race, see if we see some similar trends here. Right now I'm thinking pay up for 4, and then we might be dun-dun-dun, double punt. Now, double punt, pretty crazy to do in the Cup racing, but double punt has not been that crazy in the Xfinity series. We have been known to double punt quite often building Xfinity, not lineups. And when I say punt, it is a catch-all term. And I know we talked about earlier how it's tough to take some of these phrases from being a NASCAR fan and then implement them in daily fantasy, and that can be a mistake. And we kind of run into that a little bit by taking daily fantasy baseball, football, basketball phrases and then trying to put them into NASCAR, that came up today, and we'll talk about punts in a second, but with someone in the Slack chat asking, well, is Jamie McMurray for Michigan good chalk or bad chalk? Well, you know, there's good chalk and bad chalk in other sports because there are reasons and statistics and numbers that really pretty much carry through, at least for me, that I understand what good chalk and bad chalk can be in other sports, but what determines whether something is good chalk or bad chalk, well, look, so Kevin Harvick at the Coca-Cola 600, that's got to be good chalk. Everyone was going to play him. That's a good idea. He's starting in the back. Everything says play him, and then he wrecks. So then is it, well, that was bad chalk because everybody was on him. You noobs, you should have known if you fake Kevin Harvick, you win all the monies. Get out of here with that. You crazy. And then the next week you go to Pocono. Eric Almirola, really fast car. Just they made a mistake in qualifying. He's starting in the back. He's at a very low price tag. He fits really well into every lineup. He doesn't really have to do anything more than 15th place. And you're good to go. Very fast in second practice. So that's good chalk. Well, and you're watching that race thinking, yeah, good chalk coming through. And then next thing you know, debris flies through his car and reports that his gauges are all flashing red and I'm on the floor. Someone needs to get the defibrillator pads out because I just, it happened 2 weeks in a row. Thank goodness he was fine. The car worked out. He ends up with like a ninth place finish, sixth place finish. Good chalk. Good chalk and bad chalk, it works in other sports, but in NASCAR, it's, well, did they wreck? Did they have a pit road penalty? Did they have a speeding issue? You could make the argument that, well, some of these drivers, they wreck more than others. Ricky Stenhouse. Some of these drivers make more mistakes than others. Denny Hamlin, Suarez. And so then you could always say, no matter any of the circumstances then, that Suarez is always going to be bad chalk if he's a good player on a given weekend. And then that Denny Hamlin's always going to be bad chalk because, let's say Denny Hamlin's starting last, he's really fast in practice, well, that means he's chalk. But because he's Denny Hamlin and he makes mistakes, well, then he's bad chalk. It's just tough taking these words over, but punts. So punts are where we're just basically saving money, hope they score some points so that we can really put some stars in our lineups. You can draw the line wherever you want. And really, you probably should draw the line in different spots for just Cup Series to Xfinity Series. In Cup Series, I say anybody below 6,000, but, you know, Reagan, is he really a punt? Is Ty Dillon? Well, Ty Dillon probably is a punt now. Matt DiBenedetto, some weeks it doesn't feel like he is a punt. Sometimes he feels like he's a real NASCAR driver. Chris Buescher, sometimes it looks like, hey, he can run. And then sometimes it looks like, just do something. It's really hard to pigeonhole these guys. But nonetheless, we got to have some sort of terms. We have to have some sort of communication so that we know what we're talking about with each other. So for me, I'm just saying guys under $6,000 are going to be punts. I don't expect them to race well. There's a reason why they're priced below $6,000. Sometimes in the Xfinity Series, DraftKings, not knowing every one of these drivers and not knowing every car owner and not knowing that Bailey Curry is a really good late model racer if he could just get a chance, and so then you get Bailey Curry. I can't even say his name because he's so unknown. Bailey Curry at 4,800, whatever he was that 1 week. Well, yeah, you jam him in the lineup. Or Alex LeBay at Atlanta early this season. No one knew who this guy was. You know, DraftKings is not going to jump in and look at the Pinty series or Pinty series and see what the guy did in Canada, or then look and see what, you know what, Shane Lee did really well at the, what's the track in Indianapolis that's really high bank? I can't even remember the name of it. They're not going to look at these deep, obscure statistics and try to map it out to price the guy correctly. They can't do it. They're not. That's just not going to happen. I don't even know what kind of database you could jump into to get the most accurate pricing for some of these cheap guys. Ray Black Jr. always runs well at Dover, has been running at Dover for the last couple of years. They could have probably found that Ray Black Jr. information, to be completely honest. They should have known that Ray Black Jr., I believe, had been racing for BJ McLeod the last couple years at Dover specifically and put good races together, and there was no reason for him to be priced where he was. We're probably going to have somebody this week that goes completely underpriced, and so we got that one punt. And then you grab another punt and you spread it around. You take some David Starrs, you take some BJ McLeods, you take some Tojo Martins, you take some of these guys and just fill them out, and then you just stuff the top of your lineup. That's probably the strategy that we are going to implement. We are halfway through the podcast, and I've only looked at one Iowa race. Need to pick it up, but I feel like we're giving some good information so far. You know what would be really cool? If on the racing reference page, if you pull up the Xfinity races, it would clearly and quickly show you cup car, like yellow, almost like when you know when someone's in the playoffs, they're yellow, or I think they code them somewhere. You code it so that I can really quickly see, are there any Xfinity drivers in this race? Now, one thing I just noticed real quickly though is Christopher Bell did run at Iowa last spring. That's cool. Didn't run very well, but he was in that race. Let's look at the results here. William Byron is your race winner. He starts sixth. He is not your number one hog. He is not your number one hog. Oh, this is interesting. Now I just noticed something crazy. So he scores 35 hog points, starts sixth, finishes first. Remember, William Byron was the champion last year. Average running position, third. Who scored the second most fantasy points? This is Christopher Bell. He had a good race. I'm sorry. Sure he did. The JGR Toyotas at Iowa know the setup. So he starts first. He finishes 16th. We'll get to the bottom of why that exactly was. He scores 84 points, right there with Byron. 85 points for Byron, 84 for Bell. Christopher Bell had 33 fast lap points, 38 laps led points. He is your number one Hulk. 78 laps led for Byron, but 152 for Christopher Bell. I haven't looked yet, but I'm going to throw out this idea that we probably get a late race caution. Bell's involved in it. Something happens on a restart at the very end. Here we go. Let's look and see. So we get not quite a green-white shootout, but you do get a 10-lap dash to the end of the race. And with about 30 laps remaining in the race, Christopher Bell was involved in an accident with the 16 car and the 48 car. I hope that that wasn't lap traffic, but I have a feeling that he ran into lap traffic because I'm thinking, well, 48's Brendan Poole. He's a decent driver, but who the hell is driving the 16 car? Who would the 16 car be? That sounds a lot like it's a possible... Oh, it's Ryan Reed. I should have known that. Ryan Reed. Yeah, he was probably dealing with some lappers, maybe. I'm not sure. Maybe those guys... You know what it feels like to me is Christopher Bell is probably getting ready to put those guys a lap down. Took them three wide and something happened. I don't know. You probably have to watch the highlights to figure that one out. Third highest score was Ryan Sieg, running 22nd, finishing 2nd. Average running position of 15th. He must have really nailed that last restart. Who knows? Maybe this is another case of Sieg ran out of tires, and so he stayed out in the last caution and ended up starting 2nd and just was able to hold on. I know that sounds like I'm making a joke. No one runs out of tires. Well, Sieg ran out of tires early this season at Fontana and had to skip the last pit stop. And then he went out there. And Fontana's the last place where you don't want to be on old tires. So Sieg just actually has to get out of the way and let people by him, if you remember. Garrett Smithley starts 31st, finishes 10th. Average running position of 21st. I imagine he benefited from the last restart. Or maybe there was some sort of stupid wreck. Something happened either way. That's strange. Reddick 15th to 3rd. He was running part-time. Reddick was in Pleasant Junior Motorsports. He was running the 42 car. So he stepped in kind of like we see Kyle Larson run the 42 car. Definitely a solid ride to be in. His average running position was 9th. Michael Annette 20th to 6th. Average running position, though, for Mr. Annette 20th. Tojo Martins. General Tojo started 30th. He finished 11th. Average running position 24th, which we would kind of expect from him, but obviously some sort of mayhem madness happened at the end of this Iowa race and completely messed things up. Ross Chastain 14th to 4th. His average running position was 18th, though. Jeremy Clements 18th to 7th. His average running position was 17th, though. David Starr 32 to 14. Average running position 24. So something happened at the end of this race to shoot a bunch of these you're not quite everyday race car drivers to the front. I mean, I got a guy named Quinn Hoof. I don't know if I'm saying it right. It's got to be Quinn. We usually got two N's. Quinn Huff, running the 46 car for Rick Godovic, G-D-O-V-I-C. I have no idea who this guy is. Don't know who has the 46 car. It's a Chevy. I don't know what the history is for this thing. He has rostered Xfinity cars with Anthony Kumpen, Parker Klingerman. I have no idea the story behind this car. Don't know what to tell you, but he scores the 11th most fantasy points. Then you got Gase Sadler. Just be careful with some of these names. This isn't Daytona. I don't know what the hell happened in this race. So let me just read you some of the guys who had decent finishes. Elliot Sadler finished in the top 10, started 4th. Dakota Armstrong started 7th, finished 5th. Was he running for JGL in this race? Imagine he was. And he was. Dakota Armstrong has a good bit of experience here. The year before that, he was running the 18 car for JGR. What an opportunity that must have been. And he squandered it. BJ McLeod, 26th to 17th. Justin Allgaier, 5th to 9th. Ben Kennedy, 21st to 20th. Who was Ben Kennedy running with last year? Ben Kennedy was in the... He ran the 2nd car, part-time ride there for RCR. And then Timmy Hill, 38th to 28th. That is just a strange... Let me look and just go down the regular results and see where some of these guys' bigger names finished to figure out. Just an idea. J.J. Yaley. Well, don't even listen to me talk about J.J. Yaley. Remember, he was in a TriStar Motorsports car. Christopher Bell finishes 16th. We talked about what happened to him. Ryan Reed finishes 19th. That's a typical Ryan Reed performance, although you would expect Ryan Reed to run a little bit better when you don't have any cup drivers in a car or competing with you. You got Daniel Hemric. wow, that is a disappointing day. He had to be in a wreck. Finishes a lap down, finishes 21st. Was he involved in a wreck? I'm not seeing anything saying he was. You know, Christopher Bell was involved in two wrecks. You know, he was, though, a full-time truck series driver and getting just some part-time experience. But that doesn't really surprise me from old Chris Bell going out there and just wheeling the car around. He won at Richmond earlier this year, but barely won. Gragson almost beat him. That was a very close race there. You'll remember we loved Gragson and Christopher Bell in that race. Sure did. I love Justin Allgaier, too, but he got walled by Daniel Hemric. Or doored. Doored's the right word. Matt Tith finishes 22nd. He sucked last year. Brandon Jones finishes 23rd. He sucked last year as well. Cole Custer finishes 24th. Was he involved in a wreck? Cole Custer was not. So I don't know what to tell you about that one either. Where did Cole Custer run most of this race? I don't know. Man, all these good guys, Blake Koch, Brennan Gaughan, Brendan Poole, pretty good race car drivers, pretty terrible finishes. In case you're wondering, Ty Majeski did wreck in this race. Ty Majeski wrecks a lot. I like Ty Majeski, obviously. He was in the iRacing car. I remember being very excited for that spring race, and he started 10th, and I'm thinking, yes, go iRacing, and he wrecks. And I still kind of root for Ty Majeski, and there's been weeks where I've played him, and guess what? It's not even his fault. Wrecks just find him. The last one was, I don't know, I can't remember what happened to him at Pocono. I don't even know if he wrecked at Pocono, but the race that pops into my head before that would have been Charlotte, and he was, I think he got into some issues, but was going to make it. And then Tyler Reddick, which we often say is the Ricky Stenhouse of the Xfinity Series. Tyler Reddick wrecked him. He wrecks everywhere, every single week. Look it up. But in that Charlotte race, he wrecked like five times. He was 12 laps down at the end with only one lap remaining. Park the car. You can't gain any spots. And he manages to run into Ty Majeski. So that's why I like to call him Tyler Reddick. Reddick instead of Reddick. Reddick. Needs some work. You know, Reddick. Reddick. Dick. I know it's not as good as Recky Spinhouse. Recky Spinhouse is legendary, but Tyler Reddick is, he's getting there. The legend is growing. I like Tyler Reddick. I like Recky Spinhouse. But they are a fantasy player's nightmare. Don't forget it. Always keep the ownership. Remember when Tyler Reddick was starting in the back at, was it Phoenix? No, Phoenix starting in the back was Lupton. And he blew everything up. Tyler Reddick starting in the back at, was it Las Vegas? I can't even remember if he came through or not. But obviously he was starting in the back because he wrecked in practice. Was it Fontana? I can't remember. I cannot keep track. It's crazy when a guy has been in the Xfinity Series for a whole 1 year, not even a full year yet, and I can't even keep track of all of Tyler Reddick's wrecks. Can't do it, folks. Let's go back to 2016, look a little bit more at Iowa. I got a couple more minutes to kill. Next week on the podcast, no Xfinity. They get a week off, but we go to Sonoma. That's always fun. At least it used to be fun before stage racing ruined it. I need to go back through the research, though, and see if there is a little bit of an edge realizing how the race is going to play out with the stages. The first Sonoma race caught a lot of us off guard. Should have known that the pit sequencing would have been weird. But remember, I know I'm getting off topic here, but Martin Truex Jr. was the fastest car. And he went on the race and was obviously the fastest. And then he had a mechanical issue. And then Harvick went on to take the lead and win. And that was Harvick's really only win until they figured out that Ford in the playoffs. 2016 fall race. Eric Jones scores the most fantasy points. He starts second. He wins. This is when Eric Jones went to the championship, loses to Suarez, but has a great season, but has a Kyle Busch-like Xfinity Series where either Eric Jones is winning or he is wrecking. Ty Dillon finishes second, starts 15th. His average running position was fourth. So a really good race for Ty Dillon. And this was when Ty Dillon was full-time competing in the Xfinity Series. One of his rare strong performances, though. Brennan Poole starts 25th, finishes 4th, average running position of 10th, but unfortunately that 48 car is no longer with us. Your hogs, Eric Jones had, wait for it, 80 hog points. Ty Dillon managed a very respectable 30 Hog points. Looks like they might be able to get this race going here in Brooklyn. That's Brooklyn, Michigan, that is. So, I'm excited. We'll see what happens. Elliott Sadler runs from 4th to 3rd. Sam Hornish Jr., 7th to 6th. Hornish Jr., I believe he won the 2016 spring race, but in the 2016 spring Iowa race, we'll get to that in a second, hopefully, he was in a JGR car. Core? Where am I from? Brooklyn? Sam Hornish Jr. in this one was in an RCR car. Definitely a step down. Definitely a bit of a step down there. It goes without mentioning, but Eric Jones, JGR, doing well at Iowa. Big surprise. Dakota Armstrong finishes 5th, starts 3rd. I want to say, yeah, he was in the 18 car for JGR. Justin Allgaier, 11th to 7th. Ryan Reed, hey, Ryan Reed, 14th to 10th. Average running position of 11th. Man, it feels like Ryan Reed has been in the Xfinity Series for about 1,000 years. David Starr, 28th to 20th. Man, David Starr, what's the deal? Keep reading his name. Lock in David Starr, locked and loaded. Take David Starr and whatever cheap punt that gets mispriced, and we are moving this week. Brad Keselowski, I mentioned that already. He did not practice at all. He just jumped in the cart and started running well. This ain't a video game, Brad. This isn't like me where Fridays, I haven't run races all week, and I jump in on the iRace and expect to beat people. Well, guess what? It doesn't happen. I jump in on Friday, and sometimes I win. But most of the time, I'm racing against people who've been racing all day, every day, and they're pretty good. You can't just jump in a car and beat people, even if you have a better car. Even if you're racing an inferior field, which in some cases I get to do. Still, you can't just jump in a car and win. J.J. Yealy, don't even think about any of that. He was running for TriStar Motorsports. Jimmy Clements, 23rd to 17th. Josh Berry, 6th to 9th. Was he with Junior Motorsports in this race? He may have been in that 88 car. Yep, the 88 car. They don't run this anymore, but that's because they now field 4 full-time cars. But in the past, they had, 3 full-time cars, and then they had the 88 All-Star car. Sometimes they still roll out the 88 All-Star car. Richmond this year, Junior Motorsport, Dale Jr. back in the car. Get your tickets today at Richmond. It's not International Race. It's just Richmond Raceway with the infield and all the drinking that goes on down there. I don't know. Richmond's kind of boring to me. Don't at me. Don't at me, Richmond Raceway. I'm not a big fan of your racetrack. Sorry. So it goes. Justin Marks, 26th to 19th. I bet he was in the 42 car. Let me look at this. Justin Marks finishes 19th, and he was in... No, he didn't finish 19th. Justin Marks runs from 26th to 19th. Yeah, he was in the 42 car for Chip Ganassi. Brandon Jones, 19th to 16th. Blake Cook, 13th to 13. Gone, 8 to 11. Ryan Sieg, 16 to 15. There's Ryan Sieg again. If we can get Ryan Sieg at a moderate price, but it's not going to happen. They're going to look at track history. And he will be in the 8,000 price range without cup drivers. BJ McLeod, we mentioned McLeod again, 32 to 23. And his average running position was 25th. Not bad for old BJ. And we mentioned BJ in races before. We mentioned Tojo in races before. Got to make you feel good about BJ McLeod racing. Drew Herring. Haven't heard that name in a while. Is he a JGL guy? Drew Herring finishes. He starts 9th. He finishes 12th. Drew Herring was running for, JGL. He's in the 28 car. So 2016, is this fall or spring? 2016 fall, so before Dakota Armstrong was in that car, it was Drew. A lot of guys have cycled through the young guns at this Toyota organization, and now it looks like JGL's pretty much done. Over. Game over, pal. So, if we look at finishing position, 9 of your top 10 cars that had a top 10 fantasy day finished 10th. 5 of them started inside the top 10. Let's just see where the value would have been. Obviously, Jones expensive. Dillon would have had a high price tag. Poole would have been mid-8s to 9. Sadler expensive. Hornish Jr. expensive. Armstrong in the 18 car. Maybe you get a discount. And if you do, you definitely jump on. If we can get the 18 car in the $8,000 range, you're definitely going to want to play it, even if it is starting towards the front. Justin Allgaier expensive. Reed's going to be 9,000, which I will have nothing to do with. David Starr is your punt. And then Keselowski through the roof. Yealy, probably not too cheap then. Jeremy Clements would have been cheap. I don't believe they priced Clements up all that much during the no-cut bump days. So Clements starting, getting you 12th in fantasy points. Josh Berry in the 88 car. He is he's just a late model guy. I don't believe he does any iRacing. Marks would have been priced up decently. McLeod would have been your other punt. Maybe Drew Herring. Maybe. It's a possibility. We talked about that before, though. I don't know if they priced Lupton up that much, but Herring, Armstrong, if I were to price them, I would put them in the 7,000s. Doesn't matter because there isn't going to be a moot point. The JGL car is not going to exist this weekend, so what are we even talking about here? Let's look at the 2016 race. Most fantasy points in the spring. This is a Father's Day race. Sam Hornish starts third. He wins the race. It's Father's Day. He's got his kids there watching him win the race. He had just got done being a substitute teacher for the year. That's always weird when Sam Hornish was a cup driver, top of the world, big-time IndyCar driver, and he's doing substitute teaching. What the hell's going on with this world? Either way, pretty cool. He won the race. He scored, look at this, 50 fast lap points. 45.75 laps led points. Yee! Take a guess. Who do you think? I've already mentioned who he was driving for, but you can take a guess. He's an 18 car. Daniel Suarez scores his second most fantasy points. He gets 30 hog points, starts second, finishes fourth, but he is a whole 75 points behind first place. That's not... He's 75 points behind first place. Suarez scored 68.5 fantasy points in the 2016 Spring Iowa race, but Sam Hornish Jr. in the 18 car for JGR scored 143.75 points. It's a short track, and we get plenty of laps. 250 laps. That's a lot of laps for an Xfinity Series race. Not a lot of laps for a cup race, but that's a pretty big total for an Xfinity race. Ty Dillon finishes third on your scoreboard, eighth to second, so he liked this track. Who knows? Maybe Ty will show up and come on out to the cornfield and give it a go this weekend. I doubt it, though. I'm pretty sure he has like a little baby, and he might want to spend some time with that little baby and not go run some race. Give someone else an opportunity. And the RCR team has been pretty good about allowing, but like Shane Lee, I mean, they even gave no, it wasn't Rekovich. Rekovich was JGL. God, at least we'll have to go through Rekovich again. Old Tony Marakovich. But Shane Lee got an opportunity. There were a couple other guys that got to Jeb Burton got to run the three car. So who knows? Who probably won't be tied down. Brad Keselowski jumping in the car again and does not get the win. 7th to 3rd. The guy sucks at Iowa. Brennan Poole, 20th to 8th. Alex Bowman, 9th to 5th. I imagine he was in the 88 car. And he was. Bubba Wallace, 12th to 9th. Oh, Bubba. Missed that guy in the Xfinity Series. Sadler, 5th to 6th. Gaughan, 23rd to 15th. And Allgaier, 4th to 7th. We've mentioned Sadler's name a couple times. Not really a surprise here. We mentioned Allgaier's name a couple of times. Shouldn't be a surprise as well. But they have not been at the top. The top has been the JGR Toyotas. We round out the top 20. We go to 11th. It's Blake Koch running 19th to 13th. We got BJ McLeod. Something's going on with this dude. 29th to 19th. Brendan Jones, 10th to 12th. Not bad for Brendan Jones. Not bad. Ryan Reed, again, not bad for Ryan Reed. 11th to 11th, but I don't want to pay an elevated price tag for Ryan Reed. Not that crazy about a sky-high price tag for Brendan Jones. But Brendan Jones has been mispriced several times this year. There have been a couple races where Brendan Jones was left in the low 8s when he should have been in the 9s like Ryan Reed. Ben Kennedy, 6th to 10th. Who is Ben Kennedy running for in this race? Ben Kennedy was running for RCR, the number 2 car, but RCR does not field that many Xfinity cars anymore. Ross Chastain, 15th to 14th. Dakota Armstrong, 21st to 17th. I'm assuming that was a JGL. It sure was. Old JGL. We probably won't miss you. Harrison Rhodes goes from 39th to 26th. Hello, Mr. Punt. Is he with Gallagher again this time? Who is Harrison Rhodes running with when he finishes? When he finished 26th? He was running for Carl Long. Oh, my God. The number 13 car for Carl Long going out there and putting some laps on the board. Wow. He finished 6 laps off the lead lap. But there he is. He got himself as a punt. But you wouldn't have needed him. You would have played, what, BJ McLeod? And is there any other value that would have popped? Hell, man, you may have had to play Harrison Rhodes. Justin Marks in the 42 card, 22 to 18. And then Travis Quapple. Haven't heard that name in a while. 31st to 23rd. He would have been another punt opportunity. Who was he running for? Old Quapple was running for Rick Ware Racing. Thomasville, North Carolina. In the 25 car. They are no longer running around. And this is always great. We get to see... Matt DiBenedetto does this. So Matt DiBenedetto is a Ford. And a couple times, his sponsor has been CorvetteParts.com. It's kind of strange. Especially when you see it pulling down the track and he's got the blue Ford oval and then right above it says CorvetteParts.com. Well, Travis Quapple in this race, running a Ford for Rick Ware, CorvetteParts.net. Apparently, CorvetteParts.com was already taken. This is CorvetteParts.net. Cheaper price is probably at CorvetteParts.net, but unfortunately, I gotta think that shipping probably takes about 3 or 4 more days to get your stuff, and then quite often, you probably don't even get the right part. Hell, it probably ends up being a Ford Mustang part, the way the sponsor thing is going there. That's going to do it for the pot. Well, let's just look at some of the trends here. There's some of the value. 9 of the top 10 in this 2016 spring race. 9 of the top 10 finished inside of the top 10. I'm going to want top 10 finishers with my 4 picks. If I got to do a double punt. But we're not seeing a lot. Well... I don't know. Let's think about that in a sec. So double punt definitely will work. And then your starters, and this one, we had 7 of the top 10. So as we wrap up, we want to think about how to build our lineups at Iowa. Double punting is what we do when we really have expensive guys that we love. Or, well, there's a couple situations. If we've got a guy who messes up qualifying, and so not only are we paying for the drivers that are going to lead laps and score hog points, but we're paying for a driver that's going to get to the top 10. He's going to get 25 to 30 place differential points, which almost is de facto hog points. It might as well be the same thing. It's just a different name, but it's those on top of your, you know, Christopher Bell can get you 40, 50 hog points on top of his finishing position points. If you get Elliott Sadler starting last and ends up finishing 5th, then there's 30 points on top of his finishing position points. They're not hog points, but it might as well be the same thing, and you're going to need both of them in your lineup. And if that's the case, then you double punt. The other times where we do a double punt is where we have 2 cars up at the top who may split the pie. If I look at this 2016 spring race, they don't really split the pie, but... Hornish with 143 points and Suarez with 68.5 points. You're going to need them both in your lineup. Both should be expensive. And if that's the case, then you're going to need to double punt. We look at the 2016 fall race. Eric Jones, Ty Dillon, they don't really split the pie. But again, you got Eric Jones with 127 points. I need him on my lineup. Ty Dillon gets 30 hog points and 13 place differential points. I got to get them both in my lineup at 127 points and 84 points. I don't care if I get a punt that only scores 20 points. Those two help push my team. There aren't any other opportunities to catch up. There's no other way or build where you can compete with that. It's better to just punt away 2 things and take the big time scores. Let's look at the 17 races. Again, William Byron and Christopher Bell. Bell clearly gets the bigger portion with 70 hog points, but William Byron's 35 hog points are nothing to sneeze at. Byron gets you 85 points. Christopher Bell gets you 84 points. You would need both of those. Both of those guys are going to be above 10,000, close to 11,000. That means you're double punting to fit both of those guys in your lineup along with a couple other drivers. And if you don't have those guys, then you're just not going to be optimal. Let's look at the 2017 fall race. You got Ryan Preece with 114 fantasy points, but then there is not a second hog, which is interesting. Well, there is. It's Justin Allgaier, but he scores enough negative place differential that drivers 2nd through 7 in terms of the fantasy scoreboard are all pretty much bunched together, and there's a little bit of value there. So did I need to double punt in the 2017 fall race? No, I didn't, but going in, if you really like Justin Allgaier, which you probably would if he's starting 14th and he's fast, and you got Ryan Preece in the 18th starting on the front row, you can easily in your head say, well, Ryan Preece can easily lead the first part of this race, and then when Allgaier gets up there, maybe he'll compete, or maybe someone else starting somewhere will compete with him, but it's not definitely going to be all Ryan Preece. I need another expensive driver with him. Now, in this case, Justin Allgaier gets into an issue and loses six place differential points and doesn't have an absolute – well, he loses six place differential points, and then he probably loses another 15 finishing position points, right? He finishes 20th. Allgaier could have easily finished second. That's 18 points right there. And then he gets negative six place differential points. Well, he could have gotten – what, positive 10? So that's another, he probably lost, I mean, just being generous, that's at least a 30-point swing right there. Allgaier could have easily had 80 points. If that's the case, you got 80 points from Allgaier, I mean, that's a low-balling him. He probably could have had 90 points. 90 points for Allgaier, 114 for Ryan Preece. You need both those guys in your lineup. If they price Preece right, I mean, it's hard to say if they would or wouldn't, but if they did, then you're double punting. Am I double punting this weekend? The way it looks right now, yes. I haven't seen the lineups be released, but I'm certain that we're probably going to get one guy that's ridiculously underpriced. Trip to Life's fantastic.